This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS.
For co-host Bea Bonner, I'm Randy Eccles. Visit nprillinois.org and click on Community Voices to read about or listen on demand to past episodes. Community Voices is events you might have missed and conversations with neighbors, artists, and other business people. Today, TEDx U of I Springfield. The TED Radio Hour airs on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS during story time, Friday nights at 8, and after Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Saturday mornings at 11. This speaker is part of the independently produced TEDx event that happened at UIS. TEDx is a grassroots initiative created in the spirit of TED's overall mission to research and discover ideas worth spreading. In the spirit of TED, speakers introduce themselves before they go on stage and begin their talk. Here's Richard Gilman-Opalski with his talk on communism.
My name is Richard Gilman-Opalski, and I'm a professor of political science at the University of Illinois Springfield. I'm an author, and I teach political theory and philosophy. The title of my talk is What's Love Got to Do with Communism? And you're likely to think not much at all, but I want to help you think differently about love, and I want to help you think differently about communism. I want you to think about love as an action, as something we do, not something we get or give, and communism as a form of life, not as a form of government. So I hope this talk helps to bridge the gap between what you think about love and what you think about communism. Okay. So let's talk about communism. Now, many, if not most of you, probably feel that you know enough about communism already. You're likely to think of craven big government that crushes human freedom and Karl Marx as the horrible villain who hatched the whole plan. In fact, there's a good chance that you feel that you know enough about Karl Marx already, too. No other author generates such strong feelings among so many people who've never read his books. Now, there are some interesting and important reasons why that's the case, but they would require a talk all their own. For now, suffice it to say that by comparison to what Marx wrote about social and economic affairs, about exploitation in everyday life, his attention to the government was actually minor and fleeting. Instead, Marx was transfixed by a peculiar German concept and word, the Gemeinwesen. The Gemeinwesen, a word meant to grasp the essence of the human community, how the human community is, how it could be, how it should be. Now, Marx's interest in the community was closely connected to his interest in communism. After all, both community and communism share a similar root back to the Gemeinwesen. For Marx, communism meant a real movement to overturn the world of exchange relations. Okay, so what are exchange relations? By exchange relations, we mean to refer to the ways that we interact with other people in terms of what we can get from them in exchange for something else. So, for example, I'll give you some labor in exchange for a wage, or I'll give you some money in the marketplace in exchange for a commodity, or you will give me some rent money in exchange for a place to sleep in an apartment building that I own. Now, our societies from top to bottom are organized in various ways by exchange relations. Our social relations are exchange relations, and Marx felt that was not the healthiest, that was not the best Gemeinwesen. So Marx dreamt of a future where we could one day declare from each according to their ability, to each according to their needs. So he imagined a society where we would expect from other people only what was in line with their abilities, and where we would want to make sure that their needs were met as a first priority. Okay, but aren't there already some places in our existing society where we already do that? Where we only expect from other people what's in line with their abilities and ultimately their desires, and where we want to make sure that their needs are met as a first priority. Indeed, there are places like that in our society. Many examples we could discuss, but let me just share with you one, my relationship with my two children. See, I'm never going to say to my sons, I'm not going to feed you if you don't pay me. I'm never going to say to my kindergartner that if he doesn't do some labor in the house, he's going to have to sleep outside on the street. And that's because exchange has no business there. And we can find similar little islands of communism, if you want to call them that, in other love relations with family, with friends, with anyone with whom you're happily connected for other reasons than money. So, for example, a friend calls me up and says, "Richard, I need you. I need your time and attention. I'm going through a divorce. I just lost my job." And I say, "You've got my time and attention, friend. It's yours. But it's going to cost you $15 an hour." You see, the second I charge a fee for friendship, the friendship is nullified because exchange has no business in that relationship. In a different example, imagine you and your partner place every chore or favor you do for one another on a spreadsheet to ensure an equal exchange, right? You want to make sure that everything is fair. But instead, what you've just done is placed yourselves on the fast track to resentment, okay? Because exchange doesn't belong there either, okay? So what we're looking for are different ways of relating to other people, and our love relation, our aspiration to love, reveals in all of us a deep yearning for something greater than exchange relations. So let me put it to you this way, almost as a kind of a challenge. Almost as a kind of a challenge to the most capitalist person listening to this talk right now, to the most capitalist person out there. I wager that the best things under capitalism, indeed, the best things in your lives, are the least capitalist things. Now, I invite you to think about that because I think that you're going to agree. Okay, but fine. Why not just leave love relations to be experienced in the private spaces of family and friends? I mean, do we really need to take that whole next step and talk about a whole new social order? Actually, I think that we do. And there again, there are many examples or reasons we could look at. But let's just take the most pressing example of our time. Okay, let's take the example of COVID-19, of this experience with the global pandemic. So variously, all around the world, millions upon millions of people have been left alone or evicted, facing new forms of financial and food insecurity, cut off from the relationships that give their lives meaning, left without the jobs that they used to depend on. And then there are homes. All around the world, there are homes. And we like to think of every home as a haven of love. But unfortunately, that isn't the case, because many homes are spaces of abuse. And in those homes, children and adults can't wait to go to school, can't wait to go to work, to gain temporary refuge from the abuse of their home life. But now, with social distancing and staying at home, a terrible phenomenon. All around the world, victims quarantined with their abusers in horrific private nightmares that I'm afraid we're going to be learning about for the rest of our lives. We already know from study after study that people are unequally impacted by a pandemic. Wealthy countries can be first in line for the vaccine. Many of them even can stockpile the vaccine, having more vaccine than they have of population. And then within wealthy countries, we know that communities of color and impoverished communities bear disproportionate pains. So what's the message of all of this? I mean, clearly there's more than one message. There are many messages, but one of them has to be that we've just got to find a way to attend to other people's needs on the basis of their basic humanity. Now, inside of a love relation, you will never want money to determine whether or not your beloved gets the attention and the care that they need. And we shouldn't want it to determine that either in society more broadly. And I think we've got to learn that lesson from this catastrophe if we want to face the next one with any hope. For example, the ongoing ecological crisis. I mean, what's the message of that crisis? That we should just keep on competitively seizing upon the finite resources of our really very small planet? Or isn't it rather that we need to shift as urgently as possible, if we even can manage to do it, from competition to cooperation, from extraction, wealth and growth, to sustainability and needs. So I think that we do need a new Gemeinwesen, and we need a social order that embodies and reflects it. We need a social order that embodies and reflects it. So now I'm not here to make a sales pitch for communism. Talk about a contradiction in terms, right? But what I do want is I want to help us see love as something bigger than the private property of a romantic relationship. I want to help us understand the social and the political dimensions of this great power called love. You know, when you go out into the world and you look for someone to fall in love with, you've gone in search of someone with whom to make common cause for something hopeful on the horizon. And if you haven't found that person, or if you haven't found those persons yet, I hope that you do. But it doesn't only happen there. Also in the streets, whenever people gather to rise up against racial profiling, police brutality, racism, sexism, and growing global inequality, there too people gather in search of others with whom to make common cause for something hopeful on the horizon. So I think that when we take a look and see what type of active relationships are motivated, are mobilized by love, we're just going to have to reconcile ourselves with at least one communist aspiration in all of us. Now, here I know someone will say, but Richard, well, you've made some points, but why do you have to use that terrible word, that dirty word, that vilified, awful word, communism? Well, if a word or an idea offer us something useful, offer us something good, maybe even something necessary, we don't abandon it just because it's been misunderstood, and especially not when it's been deliberately misunderstood for political reasons. And more than that, if we don't understand love as a real refuge from, as a living alternative to, a world and a life ruled by money, then we misunderstand love, and we cannot afford to do that. Thank you.
Richard Gilman Opalski's TEDx U of I Springfield talk on communism. You're listening to Community Voices. The University of Illinois has organized a special music project during COVID called Songs of Hope. Different students have recorded performances, and this is UIS artist Joy Anna singing her original song, Made It This Far.
At times I ask myself, what does life really mean? Then I get so scared and want this just to be a dream. The pain inside of me is way deeper than it seems. It's so hard to love when the past is maybe me. I know I'm young, I make bad decisions. Will my failures be so strong and never fail? Will I snap into reality and not this day? These thoughts are driving me crazy. Pain changes you, but don't let it make you. We've come so far to be where we are. Pain changes, but don't let it make you. We've come so far to be where we are. So relieved we made it this far. All right, so close to healing our hearts. So relieved we made it this far.
Just need some help from above. Hey,
Artist Joy Anna singing her original song, Made It This Far, part of the Illinois Songs of Hope project, providing inspiration and hope as we weather the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, Robert Smith with his latest commentary.
As I prepare this commentary, President Joe Biden just delivered a reflective talk to the nation about where things stand 1 year into the COVID-19 pandemic. It gave me hope. Not because Biden is a Democrat or had just signed a $1.9 trillion COVID relief package, but because our president said, we're getting there, and by May 1st, all citizens over 18 will be eligible for vaccines, and he even spoke about hope for normalcy by July 1. And yes, I believe him. But he also reminded us that we still need to be diligent, still need to embrace safety precautions, practice social distancing, and wear masks. And again, I believe him. Why should I believe him, or why should you believe him? I believe him because I look around at my neighbors, colleagues, students, and friends, and everyday acquaintances, and I see and sense that something has been absent for a year or more is back. I see hope, a sigh of relief, a breath of fresh air, a sense of direction. It's hard to quantify. I don't know, maybe it's just spring fever, but I think it's something more. Yes, the pandemic is still with us. 530,000 Americans have now died. Distribution of vaccines is uneven. States have opened, then closed, then opened again. The economy is only slowly coming back to life. Political divides are still there, like who voted for or against relief really does matter. Dribble is promoted as news. Gunshots have been heard around our own capital city. And now, even the British royal family is in turmoil. But despite all that, something seems different. The president's talk acknowledged the best in us and highlighted American resiliency and ingenuity and faith, even in the worst of times. He asked us to join him and be realistic and care about each other. I suppose it was something I just needed to hear, and maybe it's something we all need to hear. Maybe it's simply finally seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. Indeed, the weather is warmer. Vaccines are becoming more available every single day. COVID restrictions are easing. $1.9 trillion is on the way to help us pay rent, buy groceries, meet day-to-day expenses, save our small businesses, our towns and cities, and schools and universities. Goodness, friends are even making future vacation plans. And most important, baseball will start next month. But I'm not ready to start the party just yet. Why? It's because the president said we still need to be cautious. And I believe him. Science and doctors and public health officials suggest the same type of caution. If we managed a full year or more with COVID restrictions, can't we hang in there for just a little bit more? Let's make sure we wait until most citizens are vaccinated, continue to practice social distancing when we can, and wear masks as needed, and allow the summer weather, fresh air, and outdoor activities to kick in. I realize we all want to get back to normal, visit relatives and friends, hug and kiss loved ones, and get back to our normal routines at home, school, or work. But can't we postpone some of that until July sometime? For young people, this is especially hard, and everyone recognizes that you've missed a lot. But can't a spring break become a summer break? All large gatherings for conferences, movies, concerts, and sports events can still be enjoyed in July or August, can't they? Those months of caution may be all we need to beat the pandemic for good. For spring, can we all just hang in there just until the middle or end of summer? The same health precautions seem warranted through then. These days, I realize it's hard to believe in anyone or anything, especially in government or politics, but at some point, in some way, we need to believe in something or somebody. I believe the president and our health officials, and I hope you can too. Let's be extra safe through spring and early summer. Follow the guidelines, get vaccinated, and at minimum, believe in yourself for the sake of all of us.
UIS College of Public Affairs and Administration Dean Robert Smith and his latest commentary. Today's Community Voices also featured UIS artist Joy Anna performing her original song, Made It This Far, and Richard Gilman Opalski's TEDx talk on communism. The weekly TED Radio Hour airs on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS during story time, Friday nights at 8, and after Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Saturday mornings at 11. You can read about past Community Voices segments and listen on demand to most of them at nprillinois.org. Suggest a guest. Email communityvoices@nprillinois.org and we'll explore interviewing them. Community Voices airs weekdays at noon and Saturdays at 5 p.m. on NPR Illinois, 91.9 UIS. For V Bonner, I'm Randy Eccles. Community Voices is a production of NPR Illinois.